Get after it, PDX. In-depth conversations with inspiring people in the creative hotbed of Portland, Oregon, and beyond. Now, let's welcome the host of Get After It PDX and the co-founder of Y East Wolfpack, Willie McBride.
Hey folks, a quick word about our sponsors. The Amesir Distilling Company, a new distillery focused on bringing people together through great flavors and a warm environment. They love the way spirits taste, but more importantly, they love that they bring people together to make memories, build bridges, and crystallize the moment. Opening in spring 2020 in Northeast Portland. Today's episode is also brought to you by Daybreak Racing, a Portland, Oregon company offering some of the finest trail running events and trail stewardship opportunities available today. Daybreak Racing has been uniting the adventurous and wild-hearted with the mountain, coast, and forest trails of the Pacific Northwest since 2016. Adventure begins at Daybreak. Visit them at daybreakracing.com.
Welcome, folks. We are back with another episode of Get After It PDX. We have another very special guest, Cyan Cromwell, who is a creative and account associate at Rebellious PR. So today technically is a Get After It PDX and beyond because Cyan is based in the Los Angeles, California area. Welcome, Cyan. Yep.
Hi, Glad to be on the show. I'm really excited.
Awesome. We're very glad to have you. So we're going to dive right in like we always do, take it back in the day. So you are a Las Vegas native, correct?
Yes, I am.
So what was that like? Most people, you know, think of that as, you know, the sort of bizarre, crazy, wild town it is, and don't really know folks who have maybe like grown up there or lived there. So like, what was that like?
I think that people glamorize Vegas a lot more than, like, make it a lot more glamorous than it actually is. Of course, like, the Strip and, like, the Welcome to Las Vegas sign, like, those are, like, the big things that everyone is like, oh, Vegas, that's Vegas? And it's like, yes, and there's also just, like, really regular people that are like born and raised in Vegas too. We don't live in casinos. We live in houses.
Oh, very nice.
That's like actually a question that I think Vegas locals get often. It's like, oh, what casino do you live in? Like, I live in a house. I grew up in a house, not a casino. No, but yeah, honestly, Vegas is like pretty boring. Both of my parents are also born and raised in Vegas. Nice. They've traveled a lot, but yeah, they're still in Vegas right now even. And yeah, I mean, to me, it's just like a regular city with like bowling alleys. And
like, what was your perception of like gambling or sort of that strip culture like when you were young?
Yeah, it's interesting because like thinking about even my perception of Vegas when I was younger was like the Strip and like all those big kind of like iconic imagery that's associated with Vegas. Like growing up there, I was like, where is that? Like, what is this magical Vegas that everyone talks about that I can't see from my little 10-year-old vantage point? And it's like, it's really because the city is so made for the 21 and up crowd. It's like, definitely like the adult Disneyland. I think that's a perfect description for Vegas.
Was there like a desire to gamble? You know, was that like a tempting sort of images in your head of like what that was when you were young?
It was never the gambling. It was like the clubs for me. Yeah. Like I was like, I want to be partying. Like I want to turn up and like know what's going on down there. Like the clubs and stuff was always just this like mysterious like space. And it's like you hear the promotion on the radio and stuff. And it's like, you know, especially on big weekends when there's like so many people in town and you know, like, it's about to be a lot of stuff going on at the Strip, but it just always seemed like such a mystery, like, before I was actually old enough to truly experience the Strip. Like, but I would say gambling wasn't, like, particularly ever of interest to me. I've never gambled. Also, like, gambling addiction is very much a thing in Vegas. Like, I remember when I was a kid seeing billboards for, like, "Are you addicted to gambling? We can help you." Yeah. And I was like, "Oh, that's scary. People just come here to like give their money away. I don't get it."
Yeah, so I don't know why I said gambling specifically, because obviously Vegas is so much more. It sort of makes me think, because we'll get into talking about dance, and you're a longtime dancer now. Mm-hmm. Is obviously so much of Vegas, especially like the billboards, is all the performers and big acts, and you know all those folks who are coming through. So was like that, did that influence your desire to like dance or perform, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I would like see Vegas and like the showgirls and stuff, even in like music videos, and just that imagery definitely sparked my interest in entertainment and like wanting to be an entertainer. Yeah, like for me personally, that definitely was like an inspirational element of living in Vegas. Like seeing all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have people who you looked up to, like as like stars that you were, you know, who were your heroes, or you wanted to emulate, dancers or other folks?
I'm like, this is super random and like not even related to Vegas though, but I feel like J-Lo, like the Fly Girls specifically, I don't know why, that was like a big inspiration to me. Just like anything where I was seeing people dancing, I think a lot of times it was just like on TV and like music videos and things. And when Vegas was involved with it, like I was like, oh, that's like, It felt even more like I could really be a star one day, because like I'm already here. I'm in the epicenter of it. So yeah.
Do you have siblings growing up?
I do. I have one younger sister. She's like 2.5 years younger than me.
And so what other the times I've been to Vegas, I've mostly gone there to like, you know, fly in there and go somewhere else, or I don't like, haven't really been attracted too much to the Strip besides like the sort of bizarreness of taking a walk down it once in a while if you're passing through. But I know there's like beautiful, you know, outdoor areas, Red Rocks right there on the edge of town. Were you ever able to get out of the city as a kid, or like was there ever interaction with like the natural world around you besides just breathing the air and, you know, walking the earth, but like getting out of the sort of city limits?
You know, not really. I mean, we would go hiking and things. There was a mountain right by the neighborhood I grew up in. The mountain is called Lone Mountain, and people hike it all the time. So yeah, just things like that, and kind of going to the park and like going out for runs and stuff, like me and my mom and my dad as well. I also come from a very like athletic centric family, but my mom loves to run, so we would do that sometimes, and like riding bikes and stuff. But yeah, I always just like wanted to be at the beach. Like California was always my like yes, like I thought Vegas was like everything, but I was like, LA, like the beach, I want to be there.
Well, I'm glad you've realized your dream. There you go. You're in LA now. Very nice. So when did you actually start dancing? I mean, I'm sure you were dancing around before you were maybe officially dancing, but when was that? Was that really early on, or what age?
Yeah, I started dancing studio when I was like 5. My earliest memories of dance, I feel like I'm even younger than that. Like when I first was just like familiar with movement and just getting to be more like cognizant of that. But I officially started in a ballet class when I was like 5. And then I took tap and like contemporary and jazz and just like kept adding these different kind of, you know, forms of dance to my bucket and was just like, yes, I love this all so much. I did that for a few years being in studio and then I kind of got burnt out by it and I just like wanted to do other things. I'm like such a diverse person. I'm just like, I can get tired of doing one task sometimes. So yeah, I was like, I want to do soccer now and I want to do volleyball and I want to do like cheer. And then it, when I got into cheer, it really like came back around to dance because I was like finding that what I loved about cheer was, yes, like the physicality of it. And cheer is definitely a sport. Cheerleaders are athletes to the fullest. And yeah, I was like really coming back to the dance aspect of it as well and really loving those parts and wanting to get more into that. So yeah, about in high school was when I really dove back into dance after taking a little detour from studio classes anyways, but I was like always dancing, like always choreographing dances, always teaching myself dances that I see in music videos and that I see on YouTube and making up dances with my cousins. And so I've always been, you know, into the movement of dance.
And so it sort of makes me think, because like when, how much of dance is sort of individual versus, it's not a team sport per se, right? Like sometimes you have a partner which could have that sort of team element, but it sort of makes me think it's like you were sort of doing something a little more individual like dancing and then you got into team sports and then the two sort of came back together in sort of this like team sport, cheer, but that also incorporates dance.
Yeah, that's really interesting too that you say that, because that is something that I've noticed about myself. In general, I'm definitely just like a team oriented person. I do like to lead teams as well. But like, I find, yeah, like with dance, when I got back into dance in high school, I joined my high school dance team my sophomore year. And then I stayed on that team for 3 years. And then I was captain my senior year. But through that, I really learned that I love teams. Like, I love being on dance teams, that whole team aspect, like going through, you know, the process and going through practice and like going through that with someone else makes it so much more like worth it, I guess. And I mean, I do dance for myself personally too. And like, love dancing by myself and just like at home in my mirror. That's one of my favorite stages. Yeah. But yeah, like the team aspect and just having that like additional motivation, I think was a big factor for me. I think dance is very team oriented, depending on what spaces you're in. Like, I also was on my college dance team at USC. And that was like an amazing experience as well. It definitely gave me some exposure to like the professional dance team world. Like practicing with NBA dance teams and football, NFL dance teams, and seeing how dance is kind of in those worlds. And I found it really interesting because I do think there is a divide between the like, I'm a professional dancer and like I have all these skills that I have like gotten by myself through studio training, and there's like we're a team and like our overall performance, our overall appearance is like, you know, it's dependent on everyone on the team. It's like there's not just one person, it's like the whole team is the presentation. So yeah,
sort of an interesting blend, because I think some of the connotation of certain dance worlds or maybe like the more ballet world or something is like this cutthroat. Like you think that movie Black Swan, like it's like super intense, but Yeah. So there was like a dance team and separate from cheer team, correct? Mm-hmm. So those are like totally different. So there's so you guys would travel around to dance and cheer competitions and stuff?
Yeah. The worlds do blend a lot. Because dance is a big part of cheer. I think there's not necessarily as many elements of cheer that go over into dance. I mean, stunts and like lifts and things like that are like kind of one of those things, but they're very, like, very integrated, the two sports. So there's a lot of like competitions and stuff that's like cheer and dance, stuff like that.
So I want to sort of dig deeper into, like, you like philosophy, I know. Talking more about like physical activities, movement based things like dance and stuff, and sort of how, like, what they can give us. So because, you know, our company is sort of based around physical training and a lot of physical pursuits of all sorts. And growing up, I got big into rock climbing, like in a gym and on little climbing walls. And that was like a hugely therapeutic for me, really. And like over the years, I always considered physical movement as a form of therapy for me. And also I think like when I was young, I was prone to anxiety, and something sort of intensely physical, like climbing, really forced me into the moment and sort of demanded a mindfulness that then got me out of the anxiety type mind. So I'm interested in that often than for other people, like, you know, is physical movement, is dance a form of therapy for you? Is it a way of connecting to something deeper? Because also I think it does blend into sort of spirituality and religion sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I do see my dance practice as a spiritual practice. I think it's all, you know, it depends on your intention, like when you're using it, like, and even if I'm not going into it with like, you know, a spiritual intent that time, like even just when I'm at a party dancing or just like having fun, I do find that still to be like meditative and definitely like a powerful, like mind body connection. Really in any capacity that I'm dancing. But yeah, I agree. Like I was a very anxious child. I still have like anxiety. It's not as bad as when I was younger. Like, I think just like as you get older and realize like the world is not always on fire, like even though it kind of is right now, but like, you know, just certain things started to just like naturally alleviate for me. But dance is always something that, like, you know, if I'm ever just having a bad day, or even like when I was in high school and would be having like boy drama or just like whatever kind of drama happens in high school that was just like had me in a bad mood, like I knew that when I went to dance practice and like started moving and just got into whatever we were practicing that day, that like none of that really mattered. And like I definitely found my center in dance. Like anytime I don't feel balanced in life or I feel like something is missing, it's usually because like I'm not dancing as much and I'm not being as intentional with my dance practice. And I've found that, yeah, pretty much anytime I'm doing something with dance that feels rewarding in my life, that's like when I'm the happiest and when everything just like kind of feels the most balanced for me.
Awesome. Glad you have that. So what else were you into in high school? Like, were you very studious? Were you, you know, was like college always something you were gunning towards and thinking, you know, thinking about what studies you wanted to keep continuing with, or what was that aspect of your life like?
Yeah, I've always been very studious, largely in part due to my dad. My dad specifically, he like taught me and my sister how to read before we even started kindergarten.
Wow.
But like I went into kindergarten with like a second grade reading level and they were like, why are you like this? I was like, my dad, I don't know. I thought this was normal. So yeah, I like pretty much have always been a nerd. Just like, I love learning. Like I really do. Just the process of learning and like gathering information is very rewarding. But like good grades and straight A's was like my priority for most of my school career. So yeah, I was very studious through high school. Also really like started to get into my own more like passion based things in high school. Like I said, that was when I kind of really came back around to dance and like found my home in that again. I was like a lot more social in high school. I was like really just like a little shy girl, shy little anxious baby for so long. But yeah, like I branched out in high school and like was trying new things and like, yeah, I really found my like best friend group and like the people that I definitely like see in my life for the rest of my life. I found a lot of those friends in high school. Personally, I thought high school was great. I feel like people either like high school really sucked or it's like high school was a movie. And for me, it was kind of a movie. Like it was
like a good movie, not a bad movie.
Yeah, no, it was good. I definitely always had college in my sights as well. Like that was ingrained from a very young age, was like, you're going to college. I am a first generation college student. So that was a lot of additional drive for me, was like no one in my family has gone to college, let alone a university like USC. And USC was also my dream school, had been my dream school since I was young too. I really only knew about USC because my initials are SC. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's my university. Like it just really clicked, it resonated.
I didn't even think about that. That's so awesome.
Yeah, perfect. I'm like, I put that in my application too. I feel like that got me brownie points.
Wow, so that's obviously a huge deal and a ton of pressure to be a first generation headed to college.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how did, obviously you said that was like a major motivation. Was that also like tough to deal with that level of pressure or at least perceived pressure?
It was I'm a very like strong-minded person though, and strong-willed. Like once I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And like I knew I was gonna go to USC like even before I was accepted. And I even had friends, I had a friend, well, she's still my friend. Her name is Alexis. She was like student body president of our high school, and she didn't get accepted to USC, and she was like a year older than me. So I was like, wow, like our grades are really similar, and she does like even more extracurriculars than I do, and she was also on the dance team. Like, and I was like, wow, like these people that are really incredible aren't getting into this school. But like, I still knew that I was going to get into this school. Like, I was like, just very determined to do it and to like prove to myself and to my family that, you know, that like, we can achieve this. Like we can be in these spaces. I think a lot of it for me is, I very much want to be a role model. For my family and the young people in my family, but also just like other people that like see me and maybe resonate with me and maybe look like me, and they're like, oh, I see this girl and like see what she's doing, and I feel like I can do that too. So yeah, that was like a big motivational factor for me. So yes, it was like pressure, but it was also like I was like, I'm built for this. Like I always felt like I was made to do these types of things. So
super cool. So what did your folks do? And what other ways did they, or, you know, would you say they most influenced you, or like sort of the best qualities they passed on? Sounds like your dad definitely passed on some good qualities.
Yeah, definitely. I'm like, I always heard people say, like, the older you get, the more you realize you're like just like your parents. And it's like, the older I get, I'm like, wow, I'm really my parents' child. Like, but yeah, my dad, he actually played professional baseball. He was drafted out of high school when he was like 18. And then just like started traveling all over the country. He played for San Diego Padres. He played in Canada as well. He played for the Toronto Blue Jays, and like some other places, like a New Mexico team and like Tennessee. So kind of like, I don't remember the team names, but like, and yeah, of course, this was all before I was born. But he loves to talk about professional baseball stories. So it's like, if you ever meet him, you will leave that conversation like knowing that he was a professional baseball player.
Oh, I love it. That's cool.
Yeah, like, he's so charismatic. That's a quality I think I get from my dad. Really, my whole family, like my sister, my cousins, I'm like, we can have a TV show. Like, we're very, very, like, interesting, entertaining family. But yeah, my dad is like big personality, really funny, super charismatic, great communicator. He's a Virgo, super organized, like super clean, super like, you know, keep things in their place. Like, so a lot of that I feel like I get from my dad. And then my mom, she's a cocktail waitress in Vegas. She's actually worked at the Luxor Casino for like, since it was built, like since it opened. She was one of the very first cocktail waitresses that started there. And yeah, but like, she looks amazing. She looks like she just started yesterday and she's like in her 20s still, because she's gorgeous. So I'm like, I get that from my mom too. Yeah, my mom is just like the sweetest, just most kind-hearted person ever. Like, she has so many customers, just like regular customers, that'll come to the casino, and people that aren't even locals, like people that will fly to Vegas just like, and be like, hey, what's your like schedule this week? Like, you know, where, what sections are you going to be in? Like, people love my mom. Cause she's just like, so kind and just so loving, and like a conversation with her, like you'll probably leave like with her saying I love you somewhere in the conversation. It could be the first time you guys ever talked, but like, she has love for you already.
I love your family already. You guys, sounds amazing. That's super cool. So I assume, them being such wonderful loving parents, that they supported your, not only your college ambitions, of course they were really pumped on that, but your dancing as well.
No.
Oh, Sarah, see, there was a reason I asked them.
Yeah, like a little plot twist, but I mean, with my mom, she's pretty supportive of like anything I do. Sometimes she's a Taurus, so, and I'm really into astrology, but she can be stubborn and just like kind of set in her ways sometimes. So things that, you know, I do that she might not necessarily agree with, she'll let it be known, but at the end of the day, she's going to support me because she knows that, like, I'm going to do what I want to do. I just am not, I'm strong-willed like that, where she knows she's not going to talk me out of it. So, my dad will try to talk me out of things. Like, he was very adamant against me pursuing any type of professional dance career. Like, even now, he loves that I'm not working as a professional dancer, but like, I don't even necessarily tell him about like projects and videos and like choreography things that I'm doing, because yeah, like with him, I think it was you know, a little bit of the fact that, like, he was a professional athlete, trained with as a professional athlete, and, like, in Pilates, and just how, like, dance is so hard on your body, and, like, there's no longevity in it. You can't make a career out of that. So he kind of has, he projects some of his experience as an athlete onto me. So it's like, it feels like it's coming of a place, from a place of, like, he wants to protect me and, like, wants me to have, you know, stable, quote unquote, stable options. He supports me, like, if I'm having an event or if it's, like, a really big thing, he'll come watch me dance. Like, he'll be there, but, you know, he's always like, so, law school? Do you want to go to law school? And I'm like, no, I want to be an entertainer. And he's like, but what about law school? I'm like, no, sir. It could be very frustrating.
I'm sure.
I'm like, but yeah, me just being the person that I am, I'm like, I have so much passion for this. Like, I know that this is something I'm supposed to be doing. Like, it's so special to me. And I'm like, I definitely hear out, you know, the concerns, anyone's concerns. Like, it's like, you know, your experience is valid, and what you gain from that experience is knowledge and feedback, and I'm thank you for sharing that with me, but, like, I'm still gonna do this thing that I want to do.
Well, so I think it's fair to share with our listeners that this topic is maybe a little more pertinent in your life because you still are quite young overall. So I was about to congratulate you. You graduated this year, correct?
Yeah.
Very nice. That's awesome. From USC, University of Cyan Cromwell.
Yes.
How old are you right now?
I'm 22.
I'm 22
this year.
Nice. So we have a variety of guests of all different ages on our show, but, you know, when you're talking to someone who's maybe 40, they've been doing the thing for much longer. So, like, the struggle maybe of, like, which path to take, or, like, you know, parents chiming in or giving or not giving their blessing is different when, you know, you've been doing it already or have gone through those sort of struggle points, whereas you are more in it or closer to that those decision places.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, especially with you just graduating, first of all, we'll note, I'm sure that was a slightly unanticipatedly strange graduation year.
Man,
given this pandemic.
Yeah, it's something like, I tell people this too, and it's really crazy. I feel like a lot of it has to do with, like, my anxiety and just, like, big events, like, when there's things, like, that lead up to such a big moment, like a graduation or something, I just tend to, like, be anxious about that and be like, oh my gosh, something's gonna go wrong on the day of, like, I just know it. But kind of, like, for a long time, like, I want to say, like, my whole life, but probably not quite that long, but I just have always had this feeling that, like, I wouldn't have a college graduation. Like, it's just something I like, just had this feeling, and I was like, eh, it's probably just me being, like, anxious and just me, like, overthinking it and, you know, being stressed out about graduation and stuff. But it was just so crazy that my college graduation literally got canceled. Or I guess it didn't get canceled. It was posted on Zoom. So I guess it happened, but yeah, it was definitely not, you know, the celebration that I would have liked.
just as a human of the world, I am sorry for that coincided with your graduation, this strange thing that we're dealing with. Oy vey.
Yeah, truly.
But so, like I said, we're just going to be jumping all over the place because I'm thinking of it now, because you mentioned something before that made me think of it, and then coming back, is sort of this, like, these intuitive moments you have of, like, you know, feeling like you can tell that something's gonna happen or not happen in the future, or you sort of had this confidence that you were going to get accepted into USC, even though this other person who you thought was a better candidate, you know, she didn't get in herself and you did. So I love stuff like that, like especially this belief that, you know, intention and positivity and whatever you want to call it, you know, all that stuff really can work and is very real. So tell us a little bit more about that. Are you like, what are your beliefs around that? Do you do that with everything? Like if there's any challenge, you're just like, boom, like lock it in. I got this. I believe it's going to happen. Or like, what's your technique? How do you do it?
Yeah. I mean, that is essentially it. I'm a very spiritual person. I was raised Christian specifically. I don't necessarily identify as Christian, but I am a very spiritual person. So for me, a lot of it is my like spirituality. I think that, you know, our words, our thoughts, our intentions, our actions are like all very powerful, and they're all very interconnected. Like the things you say, the things you think, like the more you speak in the ways that like feel right for you, the more you think in the ways that just go towards the things that you want and that you believe, like I feel like you're naturally setting yourself on a course to achieve those things. And then especially if you really tie an intentional action to those thoughts and those words, you know, that actually like manifests them into a real space. It's not just something that, you know, it's not just a thought or anymore, and not just something that you're saying, like you're actually putting action behind it. And I believe the universe, you know, wants to see us succeed. We live in an abundant universe, even though, you know, there's so many maybe counter experiences and things that might make it seem like the world is just like against us in every way, shape, and form. But I think everything is feedback. Everything is something that was like meant to happen for you to like take a lesson from it, for you to grow, for you to just like have a different experience that'll get you closer to, you know, the point that you want to be at. So I think like positivity and just like keeping that mindset and like constantly telling yourself the places you want to go and the things you want to do, and then backing it up with like small steps and actions to actually make it a real thing, I think, yeah, you can only set yourself up to like really achieve those things.
Yeah, that's absolutely what we're aligned with of like our business and philosophy. We say feed the good wolf, which is basically the story of there's two wolves inside everyone fighting for dominance, and one's the good wolf and one's the bad wolf. And the question is, well, which wolf wins? And it's the one that you feed. So you keep putting your energy into the good thoughts and the good intentions, and that good wolf will eventually win out.
Yeah.
So you majored in philosophy, politics, and law, and African American studies. So we were saying before we started recording here that this, you know, sort of very intense and unique and tumultuous time in our country's history right now, you know, sort of has to do with all those things, definitely politics and law and African American studies, and then the sort of philosophy of how we how we deal with these things and how we try to stay functioning human beings despite all of it. Mm-hmm. So you're a African American woman living in these times, a young woman, you know, who just majored in all thinking about these things, delving into them, studying them, reading about them, writing about them. Mm-hmm. What's your statement on the world today? I'll leave it open ended to try to give you not much pressure. You can go wherever you want with that.
Yeah, my hot take Yeah, I mean, I think even my education, like the fact that it's so just like insanely aligned and relevant to everything that's happening now, like, is another just one of those like synchronicity type things. Like, I didn't go into college with any of those majors. Oh, okay. I started as an economics major, super random. But yeah, I took like one econ class and was like, oh, too much math. Please get me out of here. I just want to like talk to people and think about things. So then I like, yeah, I was like talking to my advisors and was like, yeah, you know, I was on the pre-law track. So was interested in learning more about law and just like the systems of law. But like, I'm also very philosophical and just like to think about like, why things happen and like metaphysical things and just things like that. So then I added, I changed my major to philosophy, politics, and law. And yeah, I had that major, just that major for like a semester. And I was feeling like I had an advisor, my pre-law advisor actually was Black. He's a Black man named Eric, and he was like asking me if I had ever considered like African American studies. He was like, yeah, you could minor in it even. Like, he was like, you only have one major, you have like additional space. Have you ever considered this? And I was like, I mean, I'm already Black. Don't I know like everything I need to know? But like, and that was kind of like how I felt about it at first. And then it was like, well, no, like, you know, there's so much history, there's so much more to it. So I like took a class and was like, wow, like it was really kind of shocking to me how much about my own history and like my own people that I didn't know. Like, yes, I have all the life experience and I have all of that like firsthand account, but there's so much history and so much more to the experience of Blackness that, like, you know, we don't, like, that no one gets taught really unless you like literally go to college and major in it. And like, so often in those classes, like, they really just feel like U.S. history, like, classes a lot of the time. And it's just like, why am I having to relearn all of this? Like, why didn't I learn this in U.S. history in high school? Like, that's like how I kind of felt about it. And so, yeah, I delved into that very deeply. And I have a mentor, one of my professors, Lenita Jacobs, who is a Black woman. And yeah, I was just like able to have conversations with her, you know, about these kind of like areas of lack. And then I did like a directed research with her where I like chose a topic. The topic that I chose was Black dance, and specifically studying dance and social media. So just like, it was just some things like that where I was like, I didn't even know that this is a thing that like, you know, I could really learn about. Like, didn't know there was like a whole, you know, space where I could just like kind of be free with my thoughts and form these like very critical ideas and connections of just like all the things happening in the world. So it was like very much like my whole kind of undergrad process was me just finding more and more elements of things that were like, wow, this is so interconnected. Like, politics is so connected to philosophy, is so connected to like African American experiences and just that whole route of study as well. And I added a minor, I also have a minor certificate in culture, media, and entertainment from the School of Communication too. So yeah, I'm like saying all that to say that like everything is just so connected. But yeah, here comes 2020, just like showing me in real time just the interconnectedness of all of these things that I studied. And yeah, it's like some of the things that have happened this year are just like pretty mind-boggling. A lot of it though, like having just studied, you know, my history, the history of like Black Americans very deeply and intimately, and then coming into a moment that's so hyper-focused on like Black lives and, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement. And it's like one of the biggest moments ever, like in our country's history, one of the, you know, biggest shows of support in this movement. And yeah, it kind of feels like, you know, we're in that same place. Like I feel like we're having the experiences that I was just like studying, you know, from the civil rights era and even before that. And yeah, it can be exhausting. It's really easy to just like look at everything and be like, things aren't gonna get better. It's been like this for years. Like, why should we change? Why should we like do anything differently? And I think those feelings are all very valid. Cause yeah, it's just exhausting. Like reading the news and just like, you know, the most recent thing, obviously like the Breonna Taylor verdict that came out yesterday was just like, yeah, it can really feel like all of the noise that we're making, like as loud as we're screaming, it just falls on deaf ears. And it's really unfortunate. And I really do feel like that's the sentiment that a lot of people feel. But I also think it like goes back to kind of my belief that everything happens for a reason. Like this moment had to happen. Like society had to literally fall apart, like in our hands again, for us to have this kind of renewed moment of reckoning. And the just like well of support. And even with coronavirus, like I feel like the timeliness of that, just that being concurrent with like the election and like BLM and just all these things happening at once, is such like a hyper intense like moment of change. And yeah, I'm like, I think it's going to feel uncomfortable for a while, and like we have to be in this really uncomfortable, volatile state if we want things to actually change. So yeah, it's like it's a lot. It's a lot. It's really heavy. Like I want to just like lay down and not do anything and just like be sad until like things get better. But you know, it really is like everyone's responsibility to continue to drive this whole thing forward.
Yeah. Well, and for like a white person or not a person of color, for us to feel discomfort around the situation is ultimately like nothing, because it's discomfort that people of color live with every single day and have always lived with and like always had to deal with, always. So
yeah, I do very much though, like, because like there's also like a false sense of comfort that I think, you know, non-Black people have been able to just live in. And now it's like, you know, I feel there's a vulnerable element to it, I think, for non-Black people, especially the non-Black people that are like really, you know, wanting to change and like really wanting to just be more aware of like all their biases. Like it can really feel like everything you've been told your whole life was a lie, because it probably was. And like you were kind of in these spaces where like you were allowed to just function as if, you know, race didn't exist, but you this whole time were receiving so much you know, additional benefit and just so much privilege due to that. So I think having that moment of reckoning is like, it's a lot too. It's like, I think it adds to the whole, just like discomfort of this whole moment. But it's like, we're all going to be so much better for it.
And as you know, sometimes, or it's like, you hope people are changing. And I do sincerely think that there are, you know, lots of people who are having those realizations of like, finally sort of, hopefully those light bulb moments of realizing how backwards, or, you know, how they've been taught things that weren't the way it was. Do you think that people, because actually, so my business partner is an absolutely amazing, wonderful person. And he was on the podcast a little while ago, which was really neat to sort of have it between the two of us. And we talked about this theme of like, can people change? Right, because like some people are like, you know, deep down people don't change. Like, you're one way, like you can essentially stay that way. Mm-hmm. But part of sort of our business philosophy is that people can change. So like my business partner overcame a long time battling addiction to drugs and alcohol, essentially. And I overcame anxiety that was largely held me back in my career for many, many years. And I've actually recently stopped drinking past 7 months, and that's been great. So like, we both have that belief overall that like physical change, mental change, emotional change, like it's possible. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, you maybe get a little more pessimistic about, shoot, is that really the case? Can't people change? Like, so what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not only possible, it's necessary. Like, literally, like, the people that, you know, are resistant to change are the problem, for lack of a better, like, term. But, like, yeah, I mean, it also makes me think of just, like, cancel culture, something that's really big, you know, among my generation and on social media is just this belief that, like, if something of you being a bad person ever gets discovered, if you were ever bad once in your life ever, like, you're just deleted, you're canceled, you're not worthy anymore, like, and that's just, it's really crazy, because everyone changes, everyone grows, like, you have to. I mean, for some people, the journey looks a lot different, it might take a lot longer, it might, you know, they might have to be told things 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times before it really clicks for them. But I mean, you know, we're not here to judge other people's journey. You know, we can decide who we interact with and who we bring into our own circles and things like that. But yeah, I think everyone is worthy of second chances and is, you know, better for the growth that they do, that they go through. I really agree with like that sentiment.
Right. So we're getting on towards the end, the last few things. So due to this time we're in that, you know, is definitely, we talked about anxiety a lot and a lot of tough emotions and lots going on in the mind space. Have you found more of a desire to dance and use that as an outlet? Or have you been?
Yes. It's been, it's like right before, of course, right before Corona happened. I was like really starting to get more into studio classes again. I was like, yeah, graduating school, I'm going to have so much more free time. So I was like really ready to just like dive into the studio space again. And then, of course, like all the studios shut down and like nothing was able to happen in person. So it's been kind of hard because I am so big on like the team element and just like the having energy of other people when I dance is really, you know, it makes me feel whole just like being able to contribute to larger dance spaces. But I have like found myself getting more intentional with dance and like even deeper enveloping it into my spiritual practices. I've been doing a lot of yoga too. I think that's a big thing for me in this time that I like really discovered was like the flows of yoga and things like that. Like it's always been kind of integrated into like my dancing because it's so like movement based and a lot of the stretching and positions are like are from yoga. But I've never just like done a dedicated like yoga practice. So that's been really fun to explore and just like move my body in new ways and try new things. And I'm like surprised sometimes by like the strength that I have and like, I'm like, I'm doing handstands and like crazy stuff.
Awesome.
So yeah, that's been a really rewarding kind of element of just being stuck at home all day, every day. And yeah, having to kind of find my movement in a more stationary sense. Yeah.
So you've stayed in LA after your graduation, your online graduation. So I'm glad that not only did you obviously graduate, but you made your dream of getting to the coast of thing. You accomplished that, checked it off the list.
Yes.
And so you're currently working for Rebellious PR, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about them, because from checking them out, my knowledge of them, it seems like a really cool PR firm.
Yeah, it's really an awesome company to be working for. Like, really feels more just like a family and, yeah, just like people that are really there for you, more than like a job or work per se. But, yeah, Rebellious PR and Consulting is actually... We're based in Portland and LA. So yeah, there's our Portland team that lives out there. And then we have a couple people on our LA team that are based out here. We primarily represent underrepresented founders. So like women, people of color, we really get into the, you know, the things that are looked at as quote unquote taboo, like sexual health and women's health. And, you know, we have like sex tech companies and just things that kind of fall in these industries that are very important and a lot of times like are directly for women. And so that's like why they don't get the recognition that they deserve. But yeah, so we really make it a priority to be very like diverse and just like culturally competent and understanding just like the different backgrounds and different experiences that people have. But when we like have a client that we really believe in, which is like all of our clients, of course, and all their products that we really believe in, it makes it very rewarding to like help bring these things to the forefront and help like bring these stories to the media and to really be able to influence the stories and the things that people are going to see. So yeah, it's been really, really rewarding being able to work at Rebellious.
Awesome. And so as you, you know, summer has officially winded down, I guess we're like 2 days into autumn now. What's fall looking like for you? What you got? What are you excited about in this scary world?
Yeah, I'm like, I just hope the world doesn't completely fall apart.
Yeah, besides that, we're all hoping, most of us at least are hoping for that, probably.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's really been hard to kind of like project out into the future this year, but I am... actually working on a project right now with some friends of mine. My friend Bree, she's the founder of this company in LA called Women's Room LA. And it's like a platform that, that traditionally did events and kind of like networking things for female creatives in LA. but of course in-person events aren't necessarily a thing at the moment. So we're doing a campaign. It's actually called the Colorism Campaign, and that's been a project that we're working on. It's, you know, on to bring awareness to colorism, which is an issue that is like really prevalent within the Black community, but like is also influenced by like racism and, you know, other communities and other cultures where there's, you know, darker complexions also experience colorism. So our mission with that is really just to bring awareness and to start a discussion about this problem that is so, it's like as bad as racism. It's like directly a result of racism, but it's like not ever really talked about. It's not ever really dealt with. So we're really just trying to like raise awareness and like discuss, talk through this issue and just have conversations. That's a documentary as well as a photo series. So, and then there's going to be a dance element of that as well. So yeah, we're just like coordinating all the things for that, doing like interviews and, you know, putting together a whole documentary. So
sweet.
Yeah, it's a pretty large undertaking, but yeah, I have all the faith in like the people that I'm working with, and yeah, really, really excited to continue that into fall.
Awesome. Yeah. So we like to wrap up with the question that you've sort of already touched on with a lot of your sort of just personal philosophies that could double as good advice. But we always ask people, because, you know, we're featuring people on here that are doing cool things and are basically following their passions, whatever they may be. And I know from personal experience, when I knew what my passions were, but I wasn't following them as much, or I was in a job where I really didn't enjoy and didn't find fulfilling, how sort of, you know, depressing that could be. Or just you feel like you're stuck and you don't know what to do. And so maybe a younger person who is looking up to you as doing great things, being a dancer, you know, doing all these neat things. What advice would you give? Besides just, you know, picking your goal and just saying you're going to do it like you do. What other tidbits would you give them?
Yeah. I think, you know, related to, you know, like knowing your trajectory and really having the passion and staying focused on that. I would say not to compare your journey to anyone else's, not to compare like your experiences or your achievements to like achievements of anyone else. I think that's a thing that, you know, I know affects a lot of people in my generation, and, you know, everyone, because it's hard not to compare yourself when, like, you're seeing these people, like, doing huge things, especially with, like, social media, and just, like, it can feel like you're not doing enough sometimes, like, just seeing all the things that other people are doing, and this is even, like, advice for myself, because I find myself often in places of comparison, but you just really have to, you know, understand that your journey is unique to you, that like your timeline might not look like someone else's, and your timeline might move slower, it might move faster, you might like take longer to, you know, have accomplishments that you think are supposed to happen at certain times in your life that like might happen when you don't expect them. So yeah, I think just kind of, you know, it's okay to look at other people for inspiration and kind of like look up to people, but just to try not to compare yourself to others in a way that's like damaging to your own self-esteem and stuff. Like, yeah.
Very important. So no law school in your future?
You know,
just kidding.
It might be on the table. Who knows? I'll probably end up going back to grad school. I'm
excited to hear that.
Great. Cool.
Well, thank you so much. It's awesome to hear about all this stuff and your story. And clearly you have a bright future ahead. Hopefully with this world, the country at least remains intact enough that we can do all the great things we're destined to do.
Right. Yeah. So. Thank you for having me. It's been a fun conversation, and it's brought a lot of things back to me. So it felt good to talk through all the things.
Really appreciate your time. I've honestly just talking to you and listening to your words, I got a bunch of little bits of wisdom and stuff. I was like, ooh, that's good. Or things it made me think of for my own life. So, I really appreciate it.
I'm glad. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Cyan, thank you so much. We'll have to have you back sometime and check in and see what you're doing again. But in the meantime, have a great day and a great fall.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'd love to come back. I had a great time. And yeah, hope to chat soon.
All right, take care.
This wraps up another edition of the Get After It PDX podcast. For more information about today's guest, including social media links, please check out the show notes for this episode. Thanks for listening. Now it's your turn to get out there and get after it.